the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. Len, this is the 71st week that either you or I, or you and I, have gotten together digitally.
Oh man, right at the get-go, Roger's rug pulls joy. So I'll just continue on. Yeah, so we've been doing this together for 71 straight weeks. Oh, he's back.
I love it. It's a full CVP experience. Jeez. I don't know why. Maybe I'll plug a cable into my laptop. I have like a 50-foot cable sitting right here. But anyway,
you got to run a repeater if it's that long. You got to check it out. Might be what,
for a cable.
I'm not sure how long it degrades over a period of like the longer it is. 50 feet. I'm not sure. It's been a long time since I've delved down.
I don't need all 50, but anyway, something to think about another time once we figure out what's going on with my internet today, if it's going to cooperate or not. So anyway, Len, 71 episodes we've done. It's good to see you. How you doing over there? It's raining over here in Hamilton. Just started a little while ago. A little disappointed about that.
It started just 5 minutes ago or less over here. It's just started spitting. I'm not sure what it is right now. I won't be able to see. But yeah, I'm doing great. It's, you know, it's a long weekend. It's fantastic weather, sunny, warm, just fantastic. Hit the courts this today and yesterday, so it's all fun. Loving it. But you know what, Joey? Summer's coming to an end very soon. So unfortunately, how are
August
things over
1st,
there?
Right? Everyone feels the same way. Things are good over here. My wife was away with her mother and a few of their friends this weekend up north, where we'll be going next week. Otherwise, it was a great day. I had a great workout, did a little summer cleaning. Just a nice day all around. Did the show notes, obviously, for tonight. I really have no complaints. We should tell people that when you jumped on the stream here, I was on the stream a little before you jumped on. We were actually wearing the same Kaboom Rack shirt. So great minds, as they say, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, we've dribbled on here long enough. The show, Len, is sponsored by two great companies. ShakePay is the first sponsor. Best ways for Canadians to buy and never sell their Bitcoin. They got four things going on. It's the same four things as last week. I'm going to run down these four things again for you right now. One, Shake Squads. You and four people you either know well, know somewhat, or don't know at all, get together, come up with a team name. Every time one of you guys spends off your CAD balance in the app, you get 42 sats, and so does everyone else on the team. Can't beat that. Two, Len, Shaking Sats. If you sign up with our promo code CBP, Charlie Beta Peter, you, Sir Omar Dam, can shake your phone every day. After a year, 1,000 sats a day for every day after 365, and some level of sats on the way up. I don't know exactly what the split is these days, but anyway, it's a good deal. They also have the sats back card. So like I said, if you spend off your CAD balance in the app, you get 2% back on your first 5,000 spent and 1% after that. And they got one more thing, Len. I always forget one thing it feels like in this ad read. I don't know what I'm missing here. We got Shake Squad, I already said. Shake Sats Squad. Back, I said. Shaking Sats, I said. What else am I missing?
Buy $100 worth of Bitcoin or the competing altcoin, you'll get $30 added to your account.
I feel like there's one more thing.
Those are the four things.
I thought there's something else. Anyway, it doesn't matter. ShakePay is a great place to buy your Bitcoin. We use it. It's really solid. Super low fees. I know there's some extra competitors coming up here, but the thing about ShakePay compared to a non-custodial is that when you settle on-chain, the fees are higher because they're paid immediately by the vendor, among other things, I'm sure. But ShakePay, you can settle whenever you want, and they pay your withdrawal fees, I'm pretty sure, still with Bitcoin. They pay the withdrawal fees on the competing alt. There's a minimum, though, withdrawal, which is kind of a pain. So if you dabble in Bitcoin,
I don't dabble in there.
So yeah, if you dabble in Bitcoin only, you're going to love these guys. We hope you give them a shot. And if you got questions, shoot us a message, and we'll do our best to help you out. Who's the other sponsor, Len?
Well, what are you going to do with all the Bitcoin you bought from ShakePay? You might as well dump it on the Ledin platform. And if you open up an account with our referral code below and fund your account with 150,000 Satoshis or 75 USDC, you're going to be rewarded with 10 USDC as long as that money is on their exchange for on their platform for a period of 15 consecutive days. And if you need some money and you don't want to sell your large Bitcoin stack, well, Ledin's here to help you out. You could then borrow against it. Ledin will give you money and you could just do whatever you want. Change your tires, buy some tires, fill a car gas, whatever it is you need to do. Everything is very expensive, but a 50% loan to value. And if you think the price of Bitcoin is going up, and I am the eternal bull for the price of Bitcoin, you could use the B2X option and you could double up your Bitcoin stack. And once the price goes up to a nice number, you can pull out, you're good to go. And you simply got a little bit more Bitcoin by timing the market and using the B2X option. And finally, they do have the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. And this is industry first. So, but check their website because not available in every jurisdiction. But also when you check their website, make note of their savings and borrowing rates because these change on a month-to-month basis.
Very strong. Very strong. Sir, before we get started, any housekeeping you want to take care of, or should we get right into the price here?
Yeah, let's just, the one thing I have off, I wanted to check off my plate here is podcasting 2.0. If you're going to send the sats, we're going to be donating it once again for the next week to Bitcoin Smiles. And this is to provide dental care to people in El Salvador that just don't have the means to get dental care. So yeah, feel free to donate to us and all the proceeds will go straight to Bitcoin Smiles. And yeah, we'll see what happens next week. We may change it up to a different initiative. And if anybody has any idea who else we should be donating to, let us know. We'll consider it and put it on the list of things to consider. So yeah, that's it for me for podcasting 2.0 and everything else off my plate. If you have anything else you want to talk about, here's your chance, Joey.
Nothing at the moment. I'll just get right into the price of Bitcoin here in US dollars, 23,257 at the moment. Not great, but not that bad either.
Better than in the last few weeks. And in Canadian dollars, it's 29,892, just shy of 30,000. Let's see if we could pump this over to 30K mark through this show here. We've had some good luck last week. I think it was last week. Whenever it was, who cares? Pump it up, ladies and gents. Pump it up. Dump all your money in there and let's see what we could do. Anyways, let's just transition right to the A-Base news items we have. And we talk about this type of thing every week and we'll just talk about it again. It's about the economy. And we had some big news this past week with respect to the economy. And we had the 75 basis points rate hike. And this is, interesting because how did the markets respond to 75 basis points being added on to the existing interest rate? Well, they loved it, which was really interesting because they must have been thinking 100 basis points was in the cards. So I find it funny that they find 75 basis points to be favorable over 100, but who am I to say anything? I'm just looking at this and reacting. So right now, the interest rates now sit at 2.5%. This is the same as it was at the front half of 2019. And it's also the highest we have seen since 2008. So it's been a long time since we've seen anything higher than 2.5%. And will rates continue to go up? Well, smart money thinks so. And it looks like there's going to be another 50 basis points increase later this year and another 25 basis points after that again this year. And potentially things may level off and to a point where we might see rates lower by the start of 2023 or the beginning of 2023. But again, this is all speculative. Who really knows what's going to happen moving forward? And there's a lot of variables that you have to take into consideration. And one variable that we want to take into consideration now, it's definitely not a constant. It's the definition of a recession. Two consecutive quarters of GDP showing negative growth is no longer considered a recession. What is? Beats me. But we're being told we're not in a recession. So whatever, we just know that. Two consecutive quarters doesn't mean a recession. But one thing I do know that we are in is in deep shit. And the GDP contracted 0.9%, according to officials. And adjusted for inflation, that is probably 9%, according to LendMath. But that's an unofficial number, so don't take that to the bank. Surprisingly, one person who believes we are in a recession is Elizabeth Warren. And when she is the voice of reason, you know we are in bizarro world. She was angrily tweeting out that the Fed has pushed the U.S. into recession due to aggressive rate hikes. And she goes on to blame that the Fed has created a lot of problems, and it's up to Congress now to fix all the problems that the Fed created. So is the Fed now the scapegoat for all this, Joey? Is it Jerome Powell? I mean, do you think they're going to be pinpointing all these problems on the Fed? What do you think on that? I'm just curious.
I I am always surprised when I agree with something that Lizzie says, but she reminds me a lot of guys like Zach Prince and Alex Mashinsky talking about, you know, market conditions being the cause. Much the same way she's discussing the Federal Reserve being the cause. That's not the cause. Her party is, you know, sort of found this penchant for giving money that they don't have away to people who don't need it and will spend and behave in inflationary ways. I don't know, Len. I think we're gonna play a lot of stupider lying tonight. But anyway, I'll let you keep going with the story.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's start taking bets to see who's gonna be the scapegoat. The CBP casino opens up next week, so start placing your bets, and we'll be taking 10% of the rake every time. So we're gonna make a lot of money doing this. And the Treasury Secretary, our favorite Janet Yellen, last week said a recession would mean a, quote, broad-based weakening of the economy, end quote. And this is not what the U.S. is currently seeing. And she must be fucking blind, because everybody else is experiencing and seeing a weakening of the economy. The economy clearly is going downhill. And the White House will have to find some new creative means to help people that are currently in trouble. And one thing that is being thrown around is the Old Faithful of pausing student loan payments. And the decision is expected later this month. This has been paused to date 7 times. And the latest order to pause it expires later this month. So it's pretty much a slam dunk that this is going to be extended. Why? Well, the Wall Street Journal was reporting last week that the Department of Education has instructed loan servicers to not send out billing statements. So they're going to keep extending this thing. So whatever. And also on the table is a $10,000 loan forgiveness for people straddled with student loan debt and also earning less than $125,000 annually. Nothing spells winning like loan forgiveness. And in my opinion, the Chinese, along with us, they're laughing themselves to sleep these days. And we could talk about equities, the de facto savings accounts for the last 20 years. A survey from the Bank of America showed that fund managers have the lowest allocation to stocks since October 2008. Just for reference, October 2008 was a swell time to be in the stock market. And will history repeat itself? The Fed released some data this past week. The 13-week moving average of M2 money supply went negative for the first time since the global financial crisis. The last time this happened again was in 2008. And when it happened this quickly, well, Lehman collapsed 2 weeks later. So we're in some borrowed time right now. Also, we have the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. It's being depleted, and it's being depleted all the time. Another 20 million barrels coming out of that. It's actually robbing Peter to pay Paul, but this is how they want to fix problems. No big deal. And, well, they keep doing this shit. They're going to have to do it for some time, because OPEC's general secretary said that the recent price increase of oil is due to a lack of spare production capacity, and it's not due to the Ukraine-Russia war. And the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, they mentioned that they're tapped out with adding to new supply. So that's it. They can't open up any more oil to come out of that country. It's done. So any hope for cheap oil, is the only way to do it is we have to have a massive pullback in the economy to the point where demand sharply goes down. But this cheaper oil would come at the expense of a healthy economy. So it's, again, it's more shit, and they're going to keep on depleting the strategic oil reserves. And yeah, it's going to continue for some time, but they also want to pass a bill that will help everybody out. And it's going to be called the Inflation Reduction Act.
It's absolutely astonishing. Absolutely. Brilliant. It's mind meltingly. It's numbing how dumb these guys are, how dumb they think we are. Anyway, go ahead.
It's brilliant stuff. I love these things. So what it's written on the top, it's going to have to achieve it, right? Well, studies, they've shown it's going to do the exact opposite. And apparently it's going to be increasing inflation slightly by 2024. What a fucking joke. The housing market, I talk about this on a weekly basis, but it continues to decline. Rent is going up, and it's actually reached a record high in the month of July. It's up 12% over the last 12 months. And those renting, well, they're going to have a lot less disposable income and a lot less ability to save up to buy a home thanks to the higher rents. And also on the home market, the median single family home prices, this came out just today, experienced the largest two-month drop since we started recording this stat, and it currently sits at -11.9%. And that's even higher than it was back in the great financial crisis. The nation's personal savings rate fell 5.1% in the month of June. This is the lowest since 2009. I'm sorry for laughing, but I'm just it's incredible stuff. And from 5.5% in May, so it's just a continually declining of personal savings. What's going to happen when all these savings run dry? It's got to be QE. There's no other thing on the table. But finally, I just want to highlight the tech employees, and these are high-paying and desirable jobs. They are in less demand these days. In fact, in the month of July, 30,000 jobs in this industry alone were lost. And Tesla, Coinbase, Netflix, they were all downsizing their workforce. And I'm just naming those three, but many, many other tech jobs, tech companies were laying off their workforce. But the people that were laid off, they could take solace in the fact that we are not in a recession and things could easily bounce back because, you know, lots of jobs are out there. But that's unless we've been told or sold a false bill of sales. And it's basically they're telling us fucking lies. But either way, I'm going to say is, buckle up. The next few months, it's going to be amazing to watch. Very bad for a lot of people. And I'm going to buy some more Bitcoin.
Gangbusters couple of weeks here, eh? So good commentary from you there, as always. Really appreciate you doing all that good research. I got a few things to add here. I don't know how much more. It feels like there's like a bold line between beating a dead horse, which is what like, you know, MSNBC does or CNBC does, and what you and I are doing when it comes to the economy in the United States. Like, we are just having our way with that carcass for like the seventh or eighth month in a row here. And the news just keeps getting worse. I think it's worth saying that like you and me are not going to debate about the nature of a recession, definition of a recession, because we're sane people. No sane people are having this debate. There's only, you know, there's a Venn diagram, I would say, where the middle are the only people who think we're not in a recession. On one side, it's people who are not affected by the economic downturn. And on the other side, it's liberal or democratic voters. And so in the middle there, that's what the people who don't think two quarters of contraction indicates that there's a recession going on. At least not anymore. I don't know if you looked at that Wikipedia page, the edit history of what a recession is, but like the page it wasn't edited for years and then got absolutely like swarmed, man, by people and eventually locked with some kind of new definition. So like, just think about these things again. Like, I don't think people who listen to this show or watch this show need this information, but just in case you're new, we are getting quite a few new listeners. So maybe it's your first time here. Consider this the next time you look at Wikipedia and think that what you're seeing is legit on the screen. Consider this the next time that Corinne Jean-Pierre comes on stage and spars with Peter Ducey. By the way, I heard someone call Corinne Jean-Pierre Kareem Abdul-Jabbar the other day because she's a great defensive player. Unbelievable. I honestly just about fell out of my chair. But anyway, so like, just think about this stuff the next time you're trying to decide what's true and what's not and be more critical than maybe you would be other times. Let's talk about some of these job numbers because I keep on hearing from Corinne Jean-Pierre and her colleagues at the White House and people in the state stenographer profession in the States that everything is good, everything's looking up, and there's a number of other factors that tell us that we're not actually in a recession, even though the GDP number has been in contraction for two quarters. And by the way, the GDP number for Q2 will eventually be revised lower than it was. So it's not just going to be that negative one point something. It's going to wind up being closer to -2%, which is pretty significant. But we'll leave that aside for now. If we look at a couple of things that these guys are talking about, specifically tonight, we're going to talk about new jobs and wages, okay? Wages are something people talk about all the time. They're going up, blah, blah, blah. People are making more and more and more. All these jobs are being created. We don't usually see recessions with all these new jobs, la, 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 all this nonsense, okay? Do you know what the change in total private average hourly earnings was for all employees in June 2022?
It's flat, I would imagine.
It's 10 cents an hour. So on average, it was nothing. You're making 10 cents an hour. Now, if the White House had to put out an infographic about that, on one side, it would say that every person is making 10 cents an hour more. And if you live with one other person combined, your household is now making 20 cents an hour more. Now, that's an infographic I think they would come up with. The change in total private average weekly hours for all employees unchanged in June 2022. Okay. So right away there, that 9.1 number that they printed last month for inflation, which we know is, I think, a bit skewed, to put it politely, is really indicative. What you're seeing here is indicative of a population, especially the hourly earners, that need more support from their employer during times like this, because hourly earners just don't get the best end of the deal a lot of the times, right? Unless you're in trades or something like that. But if you're in service and things of this nature, it's difficult to make ends meet in the best of times, let alone when the inflation is nearly 10%. So we got that problem. There's a couple of things here I pulled from the Bureau of Labor Statistics website for June on the long-term unemployed. I'm gonna read this. It's kind of long, kind of dense, but let's think about what this means. In June, the number of long-term unemployed, those jobless for 27 weeks or more, was essentially unchanged at 1.3 million. This number is 215,000 people higher than in February of 2020. The long-term unemployed accounted for 22.6% of all unemployed people in June. The labor force participation rate at 62.2% and the employment population ratio at 59.9% were little changed over the month. Both measures remain below the February 2020 values. Do you think that's a bit of an issue? In February 2020, we were locked down. We're entering probably the sixth month now of being more or less open, especially in the United States. Maybe not as much here, but especially in the United States. And what you're seeing here is people that were jobless for 27 weeks or more, there's more of them now than there was last year in 2020 February.
The no, 2020 is before the lockdown. 2021 is in the middle of it. 2020.
Sorry. Yeah. Excuse me. So what you're seeing here, these numbers are not going the right direction. Okay. They're not going the right direction. There's a bunch more stuff here. I'd recommend everyone go to this BIS website. And it's a little frustrating, I'll say, that there's a lot of options for data visualization when it comes to economic data. Most of it's from people on Twitter or people on TradingView put this stuff together and come up with their own charts, things of this nature. The BLS puts together a couple of paragraphs of like what looks to be font that you would see in like a Dick Tracy video game from the 90s. It's like super small, looks like it was written on a shitty typewriter. Like you can't really read it that well. You know, there's all sorts of stuff here that's basically indicating to me that the economy is not as strong as everyone says it is. And jobs and wages, for all these guys talking about how the those two sort of figures are, those two sectors of data, they're not strong. They're not strong at all. There's people who in June, about 2.1 million people reported they've been unable to work because their employer closed or lost business due to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. In June, Len, in June, you get 2.1 million people saying they couldn't work because their employer closed due to the pandemic. That is, they did not work at all or worked fewer hours at some point in the 4 weeks preceding the survey due to the pandemic. Why do they keep saying it's the pandemic? It's not the pandemic. It's inflationary pressures. It's
policy.
It's policy issues. Like this is the worst kind of economic whitewashing you'll ever see, this whole thing. And I'll see if I can pull the link to the website and give it to you guys. But like, it's just unbelievable. Now, there's one chart here from Andreas Steno and Macrobond, and it's weekly wages adjusted for inflation. There's this trend line from about 2007, maybe 2006, going all the way up. What I would imagine is weekly US dollars earned after tax, something like that, adjusted for inflation, as I mentioned. It was as high as 400 in early 2020. That number now is sitting at about 375 and dropping precipitously.
And that number must have started going down late last year, I'm guessing.
Started going down about the middle of 2020.
Oh, even okay.
So that looks to be when, between the policy decisions around the pandemic and the policy decisions around relief from the lockdowns, that looks to be the inflection point. That was sort of the fulcrum for these drops. I don't know, Len. Like I'm trying to find the silver lining here. You and I have talked both on the show and offline about how it seems like the news is like worse and worse every week. The thing I think people should at least be happy about or find a silver lining in is that there's alternative media, social media, shows like ours, shows like, you know, Marty and Matt, TFTC, whatever, pick your poison, where you can get this stuff. It's readily available and someone will break it down for you and give you a link. But, you know, I mentioned the hourly wage earners earlier. you think the hourly wage earner, the guy who's waiting tables and on the subway to get home after that, and he's back at it the next day, or he's in school part-time or whatever, I think that guy has time to break down the BLS stuff, to go through the pages and pages of shit and control left for the things he's looking for, and then, you know, have the understanding and sort of background knowledge on how to diagnose the issues. It's difficult. It's difficult for me and you. It's difficult for people in the chat, people listening, watching. It's difficult for everyone. And that's why professionals do it and have this sort of gatekeeping mechanism in place. It's on display here, man. It's on display. Everywhere you look, the news is great. You know, we're not actually in a recession. The quarterly thing is an old definition. We never use that, blah, blah, blah. A lot of smart people don't ever do that. But if you look at the numbers, none of them are good. None of them are good. More people unemployed than February 2020, of course. And it's not like it's by 50,000. It's 300,000 or 1 million or 2 million. And again, one other thing I'll mention that's also on the website that I didn't clip, but everyone knows this, is that if you're long-term unemployed, you don't necessarily count in the labor force numbers, the people who are looking for work, right? If you're long-term unemployed, you're in a different category than unemployed, which, you know, skews the numbers even further. Who the hell knows how many people are out there unemployed, looking for work, needing government support, needing loan freezing, needing mortgage payments frozen, all that stuff. That number is probably huge, man. And I think there's, you know, we talked last week about the ethics of a common enemy in politics, domestic or foreign. And, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that JoJo's getting on TV tonight and talking about how he killed a guy that no one's ever heard of in a country that you've never been to, in a time where everyone is hurting for money and food. Make of that what you will. Do you think that's coincidence? I don't know. Maybe. I was trying to remember when I saw that announcement. What was the political climate like when Obama announced the bin Laden kill? Was it he was, I think, a more popular president, but I was a lot younger then. I don't remember exactly what the climate was.
It was his second term, if I recall correct. I could be wrong.
But his first term. Was his first term.
Was it really?
Yeah.
So obviously.
It's a great push a T-line in what song is it? Trouble on My Mind with Tyler, the Creator, where he talks about Obama killing bin Laden and getting another four in the White House.
The one thing that strikes to me from that, you know, what happened there with Obama, Osama bin Laden, sorry, is Hillary Clinton. The image of her gasping of the image. I don't know if I'm sure if you saw that one, but it's pretty funny. That's the only thing that really sticks out, is that they were live streaming that whole.
That's right.
And Hillary was like, taken aback by what was taking place in front of her eyes. So that's the one thing.
Do you think that, you know, Len, would you bet any real money that was like, I don't want to get tinfoil here, but like, I am having so much trouble believing the stuff that I see on TV these days and read in the news. And I find myself relying so much more on like people like Jeff Gundlach on the subject of this recessionary topic that we're discussing here. If you haven't watched Jeff Gundlach, on CNBC Overtime, I think the name of the segment was. It's on the Double Line, all one word, website, which is Jeff Gundlach's fund. I highly recommend watching it. He is there every time the Fed reports for about half an hour after the market closes. I can't recommend those interviews enough. And the Double Line does a lot of good stuff. They just had Lynn Alden on not long ago, and Jeff does reports that we talked about on this program before every so often, maybe every quarter, every 2 months, something like that. There's a lot of people you can get information from now that makes sense, like that makes more sense to me than going to the news. But I think much the same as like the Bitcoin adoption curve is, it seems to me to be like slowing among normies because the price is low. I feel like the same thing happens with the media sometimes, you know, like you try and get people to look at this other stuff and you just can't do it. How do you fix that? Like if they're not looking now, what's going to be the catalyst for them to start looking at something that makes more sense?
It's when things get even worse. Imagine when foreclosures happen at a much rapid pace, people defaulting on their debt even a faster pace than it is right now. So those are the times when it's going to make people open up their eyes and try to figure out what the heck is going on. They can't continually hide a lot of this inflationary stuff and low unemployment numbers just by simply fighting the numbers and trying to make things look good. Because if you have foreclosures going on all around you and people are defaulting and all this shit happening, it's going to be hard to hide that. And at that point, and when grocery shelves are even more bare than it is right now, and it's hard to feed your family. Fuck, we had just recently baby formula was not available. Like, come on, when is that's never happened in the United States before. That is third world stuff. I'm not saying that it should be belonging to the third world. It shouldn't belong anywhere, but never the United States in 2022.
And we're not even, we haven't even mentioned the Pelosi trip to Taiwan thing that's like on the burner right now too. Like Pelosi says she wants to visit Taiwan. Chinese state says if she comes here, it's an act of war. And now I hear that, you know, Joe Biden has somehow, like, again, I think we said this 2 weeks ago, like, I've never seen a president or anyone else like get his ass whipped in public like this so many goddamn times in the same 6 month or 12 month period. But it seems to me every time the guy opens his mouth, he gets a fucking lashing from some other foreign power. Now he's apparently, you know, said in a meeting with Chinese officials that the U.S. doesn't believe in Taiwan's independence. What? What the fuck? Whether you think Taiwan should be independent or not is a separate question. Promises were made to Taiwan to protect them and protect their independence and protect their ability to conduct themselves in a way that makes sense for their people, their population, their politicians, all that stuff. And now what? You're backing out on it? As far as the Pelosi thing goes, if you want to talk about, you know, powers in decline, as our buddy Massa says, you know, the collapse of the American empire. Pelosi now, if she has to go to Taiwan, because if she doesn't go, it's an indication that you've bent the knee yet again to these guys. Like, if you don't go, you admit that, like, China controls the front door for Taiwan. You can't send anyone. You can't send a politician. Can't send a delegation. Can't do any of that stuff. So what do you – like, now, if you're an American, and just to, like, tie a knot on this with something we said last week, if you're an American now, what about the current American situation politically, economically – I would argue also culturally, you've seen a significant decline, which we'll talk about in the next story. What are you proud of? What are you proud of at the moment? If you're like a moderate Republican or moderate Democrat, right? You're not one of these people who's screaming in the street every time a politician says something. You're not throwing bricks through fucking windows. Like, if you're not one of these people, what are you proud of right now as an American?
Good question.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. And that's when countries fail.
Yeah.
That's when they fail.
You know, you look at images from the streets of Philadelphia. You see people walking like zombies because they're just full of drugs. You see the train tracks coming out of California full of litter because they've been looted from Amazon.
Or nicked Amazon packages. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And in terms of Pelosi going to Taiwan, I think it's done. She's going to be going there. At least it's been reported she's going to go there. Like, I'm not sure how she could get away with it. Maybe she could claim that Air Canada lost her luggage or something and she just can't go there. But other than that, I think she has to go. It's impossible to just.
Do you remember Canada 3000?
Name slightly rings a bell, but
that airline was like. I even remember as a kid, I'm thinking this thing's going to fucking fall out of the sky.
The fact that I can't remember, and I'm pretty sure not many other people can, it's a testament to what they are all about. But anyways, let's keep moving on. Still some things we have to talk about today. And, well, let's talk about what's transpiring with maybe a new currency that is going to be taking place and developing. But before we do that, this is a relatively old story that has started to gain traction. And apparently this BRICS, and this is for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa that they've grouped together for over a decade. And they're maybe looking to develop a new global currency and potentially try to end the U.S. dominance on world trade and create a new worldwide influence. It's very interesting stuff. And yeah, so this recent announcement that they want to create this new reserve currency is causing a lot of problems because it might be putting a knife into the heart of the U.S. dollar and potentially the IMF. And this comes at a time when the U.S. dollar is in the decline, and it's no disputing that. But unless you listen to Janet Yellen, and if you listen to her, the U.S. dollar is the strongest it has ever been, but we know that's not the truth. But in fact, foreign exchange U.S. dollar reserves, I've been looking at statistics, and they've been in steady decline since 2000. So the last 20 years, 20 years ago, actually, it made up 70% of exchanges reserves, but now it's down to 60%, or slightly under 60% today. So other currencies are now becoming more prevalent in these central banks. And holding US dollars is also a potential threat from a nation for nations that may be hostile towards the US dollar. The Federal Reserve can theoretically nullify holdings of US dollars in any central bank and make them worthless. So it makes sense to diversify into a foreign exchange. But with respect to BRICS, this organization, they seem to be gaining steam. And just today, or just this past week, Algeria has also signaled they want to join up with this organization. Algeria is the largest, Africa's largest natural gas exporter. So they are an energy country. And adding them to the mix will already add to an interesting dynamic. And also the BRICS sphere of influence is also going to continue to grow. And who wouldn't want to consider joining up if you're a smaller nation, considering Russia's energy that they have, China's manufacturing? So joining them could potentially elevate a country's economic standing several notches. And I did some research. BRICS members right now make up 25% of the world's GDP. It's not a small number. Also, 40% of the world's population. Thank you, China and India. And it's also 18% of global trade. And that's thanks to China mostly. But all in all, these are not small numbers. And also, we have news that Iran and Argentina have each submitted applications to join. And Iran has enormous oil and gas reserves. And Argentina, we talked about it in the past, they do have some oil over there. So again, more energy nations joining this sphere would be very interesting. And there's also rumors of Egypt, Turkey, and even Saudi Arabia wanting in. And this economic sphere, if it fully flourishes and allows to grow, it could seriously challenge the US dollar. But not only that, it's also a political issue sphere. You have these like-minded countries that could be very challenging to the United States and Western countries. But back to the world currency idea, this really could potentially put a wrench in the US dollar and their influence of power. So if you look at it, it's in hindsight, it's inevitable like something like this would take shape and a new currency would come to fruition. For example, if you look at Russia cutting off their assets following the invasion of Ukraine, I'm not going to say it was the wrong decision. It certainly was the right one in my eyes. But what was done? Well, it left Russia in a position where they had no alternative but to seek out allies and partners that were willing to create a new currency. In fact, we had just a few months back, the Eurasian Economic Union, and this consists of Russia, Armenia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Belarus, they also announced that they are going to go through the motions of creating a new international currency. So there's multiple international currencies that are being floating around, at least being proposed. And if any of these come to fruition and become big enough, it could create an alternate payment system that could potentially rival SWIFT. Very, very interesting stuff. But I think in the end, this is going to just be something that's going to be a big thorn in the side for the US dollar. They're going to have to find a way to stop this. I'm not sure how, because if you're going to have Saudi Arabia, one of the older allies, I suppose, of the United States joining this, this could be a real problem. More than anything, just keep your eyes open for this, because this is going to show you how weak the United States is, how weak is their influence, and how weak is their US dollar.
Total gong show, man. You had some stats there that were really good that I have as well. This 40% of the population, 25% of global GDP is huge. Iran, Argentina, and Saudi Arabia. Like, if Saudi Arabia joins BRICS, like, look out, look out. Let's talk about exactly how big the BRICS sphere of influence is at the moment. Seven largest agricultural commodity producing countries. Okay. Who's number one?
Russia.
China. Who's number three?
I guess Russia.
Russia. Who's number four?
In BRICS, India.
Brazil. Who's number five? Oh,
India.
India. So four of the top five are BRICS. United States is number two. In 2021, five countries accounted for 51% of the world's crude production. United States of 14.5. That number is probably lower now, given the way these guys are just turning their back on petroleum. Second is Russia, 13, Saudi Arabia, 12, Canada down there, 5.8, way lower, way lower. So This is all coming up one thing. Now, here's another one for you. Top 10 countries with the largest gold reserves. United States, 8133. No one's seen any of these reserves, of course, in a long time, but I'm sure they're there. Steve Mnuchin famously said he saw them and he knows they're there. So that's about as good as running a note, I guess. Germany, they're at 3,300 tons. Italy, France, Russia, China. So Russia, China, they're right in the middle. It's combined a little over 4,000 tons. So about half of the U.S. Claimed gold reserves. Now, here's a nice one here. The list of countries by net exports, you know, is number one, of course.
China,
by a long shot. Fourth on that list is Russia. Saudi Arabia is six. Brazil is 11.
And they only export one thing.
That's right. And Brazil is 11. So all this to say that what is the plan for America, Europe, Canada, if these guys decide, you know what? We're actually not going to take USD for trade anymore. You're going to have to pay us in the commodity-backed brick currency that fluctuates based on the price of commodities, which also, by the way, your policies are continually driving up to and through the goddamn roof. What is the outcome for the Western world in that case? What do you think?
It's going to be doom and gloom, especially if they're going to be pushing away any of natural resources that they could take advantage of. And if they're going to lose an ability to trade in US dollar for some of the goods from China, it's going to be a real problem.
It's going to be huge. I was also watching a video. I suspect you maybe also watched this. Did you watch this like 20-minute BRICS video? I don't know. I can't remember what channel it was on, but YouTube warned me it was from Chinese state media. So I absolutely watched it and believed everything I saw.
I love when YouTube does that.
as soon as they tell you that, you know, you got to watch. It's the ultimate Streisand effect. So the common theme that I keep hearing from these guys is not that they're aligning because they want to have they want to have leverage over the West, or they want to leverage over America, or they want to trade together and sort of build an alliance that makes sense for them the same way Europe has one, the Eurozone. They all use the same language, Len. They want to get together to deal with the Western powers. What does that sound like? If someone says they want to get together to deal with you, does that sound to you like it's going to be a sort of a jovial, respectful barter and sale experience? Or does that sound like they might break your thumbs in an alleyway? Which way would you lean there, you think?
I think it's going to be Call of Duty, but more like real life.
So, you know, for me, I hear that language and I'm a little concerned. A boomer in the chat is asking one more time, what are the U.S. gold reserves, or what is the total number of U.S. gold reserves? It's about 8,000 tons, if you believe the U.S. claims, boomer. Like I said, no one's really seen them. So I think the other thing, Len, that's worth mentioning here is the U.S. used to export American culture, you know? Like, if you look back at the 90s, think about all the culture we were exporting. Nike, everyone loved Michael Jordan everywhere he went, Ken Griffey Jr., the NFL, all that stuff. We were really exporting stuff. And I remember as a poli sci major in university, one of the things we talked about a lot was American hegemony will win out because American culture is the most desirable culture on the planet right now, for better or worse. And I think a lot of people believe that. I certainly believed it. I still think there's elements of American culture that are extremely desirable, but big but here, okay? But so big that AOC will probably make an Instagram video about it. Actually, the thing I would just say is that there's been a significant cultural decline and bleed in America in the last 10 years. I don't think that's up for debate. I don't know if it started before that or if it's, you know, maybe a little faster than I think it is. But for me at 35, almost 35, I can remember a stronger, more coherent and a more proud American culture before I was 25 years old. What does that mean? It means that when we used to really appreciate companies like Nike, Apple, Microsoft, whatever, going overseas and setting up shop, establishing relationships with dictatorial powers, China, for example, et cetera, et cetera. It was a strong thing because you knew that Apple and Nike and Microsoft were aligned with the U.S. hegemony and the U.S. dollar first and foremost, right? You knew that. If push came to shove, that's where they would park their chips. Do you think if Apple had to choose right now between continuing to, you know, deal with, let's say 5 or 10 years from now, where do you think Apple would prefer to be for the next 20, 30, 40 years? You think they prefer to be in China, or you think they prefer to be in America? The thing that you even have to think about it is enough to cause concern.
No,
for the American government, I'm sure.
The IP stealing of IP comes to mind, and it just makes me wonder why anybody would want to do business in China, because
I'll tell you why. Because they have the fastest growing population, right? That's been the case for a long time. Although I know it's slowed in the last 5 or 10 years, but still they have a huge population over there. And the third world, the sort of developing world, is becoming modernized, and they're modernizing at a rate that's much faster than America and Canada and Europe modernized that, because they're following the, you know, second mover model. They've seen the mistakes, they know what to avoid. And part of the, you know, thing we've talked about on this show when it comes to like Bitcoin adoption, we've mentioned it vis-a-vis El Salvador and other places, is that these guys have just enough, and sometimes too much maybe, but most of the time just enough of a dictatorial lean that if something goes wrong there and they see a cultural decline, or, you know, I almost don't even want to use the word, but I will to illustrate the point, this sort of woke thing showing up or cancel culture showing up, they'll squash it. They'll squash it in favor of productivity. They'll squash it in favor of shared interests and shared values among their population. They're not afraid to do that. America, Canada, and I would say mostly Western Europe has been afraid to do that, and they're paying the consequences now. So that's sort of one broad idea. The U.S. also used to go abroad when it wasn't just sending their culture and their corporate entities abroad. They used to go abroad, you know, think pre or maybe just after the Bush Doctrine 2001. And they used to say the same thing all the time. We're going to win hearts and minds. They said that in Iraq. They said in Afghanistan. They've said it, I'm sure, many times since then. Do you think that they have at the moment the political propaganda machine as far as the media goes and cooperation from their allies abroad to ensure that they can keep hearts and minds aligned at home during a war that raises questions? Think about Ukraine, right? They're sending a lot of money to Ukraine during an inflationary period. What do you figure the support is at the moment for the Ukrainian defense fund, we'll call it, coming from America? I bet you it's like, you know, at best it's probably 50-50 split.
It's going down with every day. I guess initially it was much higher, but I guess now it's much lower than it was yesterday.
These guys, you know, they don't understand that the things they do have consequences, because they're living in a period where everything they did was cleaned and sanitized before it went to the media and then, you know, eventually to the public. And it really helped shape public opinion in a positive light. They're missing that now in a way they haven't been before. This is the first, you know, I think this is the first American social media war moment, right? Either this or Afghanistan, you could say, I guess, last summer during that botched pullout. But anyway, other thing I would mention is that, Len, the BRICS countries, what do they got to lose, honestly, by doing this?
It's a lot of upside. So they're swinging for the fences. And if they strike out, they'll still be at the plate hitting the next pitch. So it's no big deal for them.
Because America's so reliant, as you're exactly right.
They have nothing to lose. But
I think they have nothing to lose. And you didn't mention our old friends, the SDRs, which also made an appearance in some of the research I did.
I didn't mention the IMF being made aware.
Because the IMF, World Bank, the United Nations, all these like American, these are American institutions, okay? You can say whatever you want about the UN and the IMF and the World Bank, but they're American institutions. They're funded by America. They're protected by America's military directly or indirectly, and they run on U.S. dollar hegemony. It's not a mysterious cloud surrounding these things. Where do they get the money? How do they fund it? Where's the military support? It's all America. And so these guys are not just gunning for the states directly. They're gunning for all the sister organizations too. And they're like, these things are so unpopular already. They're on the brink as it is, man. And so I'll just leave you with this. Okay. If I paint a picture for you where there's two possible outcomes. Okay. One where BRICS attacks the USD and chokes Europe of energy and exports, and in response, the U.S. and its allies are competent, swift, and deal with force, military or economic. And then another situation where during preparation for an attack on U.S. soil, there's a debate about whether air raid sirens should be replaced with jazz hands so as not to trigger anyone. Which one do you think we're closer to right now?
A second, for sure.
And it's not even a conversation. America and the West are closer to replacing air raid sirens with jazz hands than they are to responding competently and swiftly with their allies in face of a BRICS economic or worse attack. I don't know what else to say. If you don't think that, I got a bridge to tell you, man. And there's a lot of people, I think, who are still kind of in the dark, but it's not going to be long. Like you mentioned, when things get bad, it's going to be hard to keep ignoring this stuff. Next dominoes for me, I'd like to hear what yours are. Mine are Taiwan, the U.S. dollar inflation problem and U.S. markets continuing to struggle. The U.S. midterms and the 2024 election in the States will be huge as well. The European winter as far as Russian energy. And I think the fifth one that's a bit of a wild card, especially after the last 3 weeks, is how healthy is Biden? Is he healthy enough to really come on TV, do the addresses? Are they going to have to start passing stuff off to the VP? You'll notice that the VP is more or less a laughingstock every time she gets on stage, talking about the color of her jacket and you know where she's sitting at the table and stuff like that for God knows what reason, I guess, for the visually impaired, which I, of course, don't want to insult, but there's things that the VP shouldn't be tasked with. And I don't know about you, but I think it's awfully strange that Nancy Pelosi is going to Taiwan and not Kamala Harris. Is that a bit weird to you? It seems to me like they don't want her making any important decisions. So instead they send Pelosi over there because at least she's experienced, I guess. I don't know if she's competent, but at least she's experienced. All this stuff to me, it just seems like there's a lot of dominoes that are just, you know, they're blown in the wind, man. And I don't think there's been this many moving pieces that were capable of really disrupting the American empire moving at the same time in a long time.
No way has it been anywhere close to this, because you touched upon it in the 90s when they were exporting culture. Remember, that was at a time when the Soviet Union collapsed and there was a vacuum for new products to be imported to these countries that just didn't have them for 40 years at that point. So they wanted to get their Coca-Cola, they wanted to get their GM cars, they wanted to get everything from the United States. And it was just a great time to be an American businessman or businesswoman, because you were able to really increase your wealth just because there were so many new markets open. But also to consider, even a few decades earlier, the Marshall Plan really made the United States big on a global scale, because they were able to import their culture into their allies that they just developed over the period of time just after the war. So, and this is why it really pisses me off. I talked about this in, I don't know, 3 or 4 episodes ago, that how good of a hand did we have it here? When I say we, were talking Canada and the United States, where we've been given such easy things to deal with. Great natural resources. We were protected from war because of, you know, you have water on east and the west coast, and on the north you have this ice that you just can't, it's impenetrable. So we were given such a good hand, and just pissing it all away because they were trying to deal with the problems, trading away long-term prosperity for short-term fake gains. And here we are, you just do that continually. Eventually, you run out of whatever it is you're drawing from. The well gets dry, and here we are. And it's sad, but you fucked up so bad. You had a fucking great hand, and you threw it all away.
It's unreal.
For 4-year election cycles, it's pathetic. And here
this
we
is are. Why this is why Len, people are like talking about how one of the like I wish I knew more about like the fall of Rome and all these things, and maybe you do. Politicians are pillaging the empire on the way down. It's obvious. Like Pelosi's, you know, the example we go to all the time with the chips thing, and like she's getting filthy rich, like obviously trading on insider information, and no one seems to fucking care.
Alleged.
No one seems to care.
Alleged.
It's fucking horseshit. No. Fucking
is. No. We don't want to get sued. It's just alleged.
Oh my God.
Please, we don't want to.
It's alleged. Nancy is allegedly giving information to her husband, Paloma Paul. I don't know, Len. Like I just think, like, man, you know, this is what the end looks like. It's got to be, right? What and the other thing too that people always say, like, well, you know, there's still food on the table. I think one of the White House guys actually said the other day, the economy can't be that bad because you're not starving. Like, holy fuck, man. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar can't fucking play defense on that one. That's going to be a tough sell.
Yeah, wait till tomorrow when the shelves on the grocery stores are bare and you can't find any food. We had this recently with the baby food shortage. So this isn't fucking ancient history we're dealing with. And a baby you can't deal with. You could deal with an adult, say, listen, you're not going to be able to eat today. It sucks, but you could deal with it. Fucking infant can't do that. You have no, you have to feed them, or else they're going to fucking die. But whatever. Let's move on, Joanne. I'm just getting riled up. Let's talk about the Canadian news. And one thing I want to mention is Ledin came out with their rates for the month of August. And, well, same thing from the previous month. The rates have remained unchanged. And for balances up to 0.1 BTC on their platform, you're going to earn 5.25% APY. And balances over 0.1 BTC, you're going to be earning 2% APY. And USDC stays at 7.5% APY, and that applies to all USDC, regardless of the amount you put in there. But also, there was some news from Ledin today. And starting this month, which is August, the third day of each month, clients from Ledin, so you and I, Joey, and hopefully a lot of our listeners, they're going to be providing us, them, everybody, with statements detailing our balances and our transactions for the account for the previous month. And this will detail any usage of Ledin savings, tradings, loan products. And it's going to make it easier just to look at and keep a record of what's going on with your account. And you could also download this from their platform as well. But this is going to be provided at the third of every month. So in 2 days, we should be getting something. I think by email would be pretty cool to see.
What's going to be on your statement? Like, I'm not, you don't have to answer that question if you don't want. But like, I never put like more stuff on Ledin. Like, I'm capped where I am, I think, as far as like the risk I'm willing to take. Although, I mean, maybe I'll go higher. It's hard to pass up sats in the current market, because I just think this thing is going to absolutely rip in the next little while. Contrary to my earlier poorly placed technical analysis call. But anyway, really good service. I can't think of anything Ledin has done since we started talking with them a year and a half ago when we first started the show, right? Mario was one of our first guests. I can't think of anything they've done that I haven't liked. Can you?
Lowering rates, but I mean, that's more market,
you know.
I'm more being facetious here, but they've been pretty good. In fact, they've only introduced one item, I believe, since we've met Mario, and that's the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. When I say only one, it's still a relatively large, but what else could they add? I'm not sure.
It's nothing. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the service is great. Proof of reserves. Mm-hmm. I know like there's some people out there that maybe don't fully understand how it works. Mario would be happy to help with that, or we'd be happy to help with that. There's also, like, I think, again, we say this every week, and I don't want to sound like I'm shilling for a sponsor, because they are a sponsor, but we don't have to do this. This is not a contractual obligation to talk about the rates, but I know we were. It was always a story. And I'll also say that, like, hey, man, there's no other company in the last, 3 months where everyone was going tits up and couldn't get a response and had to, Discord shut down if you're a Compass miner, or like you got to go to Reddit to comment to one of Zach Prince's lackeys about BlockFi. You can message Mario anytime. Mario's on Twitter all the time, man, talking to people about all kinds of stuff. He'd be happy to talk to you about this too. Sorry, Mario. Don't want to blow up your inbox, buddy. But, it's really true, though. The book is open on these guys. It doesn't get any better. ShakePay is the same way. I that's why we took these guys on, right? It's a solid company. I'm happy the rates are staying the same, too. I do like the sats, total daily. I visit my Ledin homepage more than I'm willing to admit, just to see the number.
But the number doesn't really reflect until the end of the month. So if you're going
on
there,
that's right.
It's adjusted at the end of the month. And Joey, I only have a couple of more stories on the Canadian side before we transition to the rest of the news. And surprisingly, these two stories, they are my Bitcoiner and NoCoiner of the week. So we might as well do them now.
Well, okay, you do yours. I'll do mine at the end. Unless you want to do it now. Mine's a story too. I'll add a news story for you here. You do yours.
Okay, before we do it, this portion of the show is sponsored by Tahini's. It's a restaurant, many locations, 14 if I recall correctly, in Southern Ontario. Check them out, because they are wonderful. Ali's a wonderful Bitcoiner. I'll be talking about that. Why he's my Bitcoiner of the week in just a second. But great food. I actually ate not too long ago with one of our listeners, and he said he got goosebumps just eating the food over there because it was so good. So check it out. You get goosebumps.
That's pretty weird. That's pretty weird. But good, I guess. But still,
yeah. Weird. Oh, hey, man. It was all good, man. And in fact, yeah, I'm not gonna dox who it is, but yeah. Okay. Anyways, so my Bitcoiner of the week is Ali from Tahini's. This is why I had to bring it up right now.
Okay.
And why is he my Bitcoin of the week? Well, it was announced this past week that Tahini's purchased more Bitcoin, and they continually buy Bitcoin for a long term, and adding it to their balance sheet is their strategy. I love it. How could you, this guy not be the Bitcoiner of the week? It's so fitting. And yeah, check him out. And you know what? Next week on the 7th of August, it's a Sunday next week. 7 is a lucky number in Egypt. Everybody on the 7th should go out and eat tahinis. I'm going to do that. Everybody here should do the same, as long as they're within, you know, close driving distance to tahinis. But check it out. The 7th, I'm going to be there. Hopefully you'll see me there too.
I'm supposed to respond to that? Like, what? It's a great story. He's adding Bitcoin to his balance sheet and tweeting about it. Hey, I saw that. Outstanding. You can't go wrong.
If you
are
have
you
a
adding to your balance sheet, I'm adding to my balance sheet. Why shouldn't he do the same thing?
I agree.
Base and shawarma man. He's the base shawarma merchant. What can you say? This guy's as good as it gets. We love Ali.
So do you have a Bitcoiner of the week you want to add at this particular moment or no?
You want me to do mine right now?
You have a Bitcoiner before we go to the no coiners.
I got a Bitcoiner of the week. Okay, so my Bitcoiner of the week is, I feel that he's very, like, I know him from Twitter and I follow him for a long time, and I'm fortunate to kind of be familiar with his work and his tweets as well. It's a good follow. It's Preston Byrne. And Preston is a lawyer, a partner, I believe, at Anderson Kiln with Haley Lennon and Stephen Pally, I think, is the other partner there. Anyway, not important for now. Preston, 4 years ago, Len, wrote this piece that was titled, let me pull it up here, "What Do You Legally Quote Unquote Own with Bitcoin? A Short Introduction to Crypto Property." So this is a long ass piece. I'm not going to read the whole thing for you guys now, obviously, but I'm happy to share this after the show because you'll need this actually, as it turns out. So he wrote this piece, like I said, about 4 years ago, talking about how the law doesn't capture possession ownership without possession outside of things like collateral and other sort of niche situations, and that the law requires that Bitcoin requires that a new variety of law. I hope he doesn't listen to this. He's going to absolutely tear me apart for saying all this stuff when we talk to him. A new variety of law to capture what Bitcoin is, this UTXO on chain that's available with keys. And it's not really collateral. It's not really owned. It's not really possessed. It's not any of these things.
It's a new asset class.
You know what I mean? But the asset class is one thing. But as far as like a legal entity, what is it? How do you own this? Because this isn't owned the same way anything else is owned. The UK Law Review today released a report that they teased 4 days ago saying exactly the same fucking thing. They came to the same conclusion that Preston did. We need something new. Now, here's a real treat for you in the audience, listener and viewer. Preston is coming on the show Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time. And we're going to talk to him about this thing. I'm going to send this out after the show, his article, and then the UK thing, which you've probably already seen. But if you haven't, I'm happy to send that out too. And we're going to go through exactly what this means, because the UK now, safe to say, I think, is the furthest ahead as far as Bitcoin legislation on the planet. It's a huge step. It's very dense. I tried reading it a little bit, but Preston's going to come on Wednesday. We'll talk to him a bit about it. And, you know, we'll do the same thing we always do with the guests. We'll talk to him a bunch, and we'll see what he's all about. And this thing is really important, I think. And if you don't know about it yet, you're going to know about it soon. So I want you to hear it from us, and I want you to hear it from him. Bitcoin of the week. Easy choice.
Yeah, good choice. And yeah, 7 p.m. this Wednesday. Check it out. We'll be interviewing him. It should be a dandy one. All right, so my no coiner, it's another Canadian. That's why I threw them both at the end of the Canadian stories. Is her name is Bridget Casey, and she's from the Globe and Mail. And she wrote an article called it was written as High Inflation and Rising Interest Rates Are a Financial Opportunity for Young People.
Len, the number of people who gave me shit about tearing this down, honestly cannot believe the simping in the comments. But anyway, go ahead.
You know what? What I've learned is there is so much simping going on, and the more simping I see, the more fuel is added to my fire, and I love it. So bring it on. The simping is fantastic, and it just keeps me going even further and faster. But in this one, she is talking about her assessment that this may be a good buying opportunity,
but for a lot of young people. But he's also taking that there's also opportunities to buy homes as well, that maybe they people should revisit their aspirations of home ownership. But really, this isn't a possibility for young people. Yes, the price of homes are lower than they were a few months ago, but this is primarily due to higher interest rates. Higher rates also mean you need more income and more savings to get pre-approved for more money or even the same amount of money. So prices of homes may have dropped, but they may not have dropped fast enough to take into consideration the increase in interest rates. So theoretically, we may be in a point now you actually have to have more income and more savings to actually be pre-approved to buy a home. So she's out to lunch when she believes that young people should be looking at potentially even buying a home. Not only that, wages are not keeping up with rising costs. I talk about this at length. And we mentioned earlier about rents in the United States going up. Same shit is happening within Canada. It's going through the roof. What opportunities exist for these younger people? They have less discretionary income that they could spend. They have less money they could save. There's fucking less hope for them. All these problems, I feel bad for them because they were born in this situation and they're just being handed to it just because the previous generation fucked up and fucked up royally, that they now just straddled with high interest rates. They're straddled with high debts on a national level. The money is being debased. Job opportunities are no longer there. It's sad. So high inflation is not a good opportunity for young people. It's not good financial opportunity for anybody. Bridget, Casey, you are truly a fucking no-coiner. I like that Tahini's thing in the background.
I just pulled that up. That's got to be the worst, lowest quality graphic. Ali, send us a proper-sized PNG file, please. no matter what the price is, always a bull market at Tahini's. God bless you, Len. Great, great. Bridget, or whatever. What's her name? Bridget, yeah? She sucks. She sucks. That article sucked. Some guy's getting on me about, oh, millennials have more savings than ever before. Show me the breakdown between the top 80% of people in that savings discussion and the bottom 20%. And I will show you the reality of the situation. People are not saving money. Those who need money are not saving it. Those who need it the most are spending it. And you see that in the Visa quarterly earnings numbers, that it's a strong consumer or whatever. It's just like all this stuff together tells you that there's a problem. And Bridget instead is again stenographer for the state. Oh, inflation's good. Like fuck off.
I love it. We got him going.
Fuck off.
All right, that's it for the Canadian news. And as for the rest of the news, I'm gonna lead off with a story about El Salvador, Joey. You're gonna like this because you were very vocal about Bukele, and I want to see if you could pick this one apart. I have nothing to say about this. I'm going to remain neutral. So he announced just this past week that, and I'm going to quote, "Today we are sending two bills to Congress to ensure that we have the available funds to make a transparent, public, and voluntary purchase offer to all the holders of Salvadorian sovereign debt bonds from 2023 to 25, whatever the market price is at the time of each transaction." So, wow, to publicly state that there's going to be transparency and public information that's going to be floating around. I mean, I'm not sure how to digest this. I'm sure you have some comments you're going to want to say about this. I'm going to remain neutral in this one. So go ahead.
I don't know what to say. I've been following our friend Jaime Garcia on Twitter today. He's got the barbecue out and he's looking for beef. Okay. So he was out there today. He's going after Alex Gladstein. He's going after Francis Puyo. He's gunning hard at a few people. We got a bit of a lull in the summer schedule. Like we just added Preston this week, like today. If we got a break next Wednesday, I think it might be time to bring him on. And let's talk through some of these things that are going on in El Salvador, the bonds, among other things. I think Jaime is neutral when it comes to Bukele and very passionate about the success of the country. And so I'm confident that if Bukele was doing something that Jaime disagreed with, he would be happy to tell us and tell us why and tell us what the problems were. I think he gets a lot of shit on Twitter because it's easy to confuse the passion for the success of El Salvador with, you know, blindly backing Bukele, but I just don't see it like that. And so I'd like to talk to him, maybe, maybe I'll send him a DM, or you can send him a DM, or maybe he's listening right now. Or one of you guys can tweet him and tell him that we're talking about him and to come on next Wednesday. Cause I think we got a gap next Wednesday, right? I'm pretty sure.
I think we're open. I'll make sure we at least make the opportunity to bring him on. I have thought of a way to do so, and I'll just action it, and it will be we'll do our best.
Okay.
So I'd love to get him on to discuss this. Apparently there's a lot of FUD that is being drummed up from what is going on in El Salvador. In fact, even Max Kaiser is going on the warpath these days. And and he's backing up exactly what Jaime is talking about or writing about on Twitter. Max is very passionate as well. So it's good to see. Max has a lot of people's backs. So it's he's a good person to have on your side. But, you know, he's been right on a lot of times, but wrong on a few others. But who of us haven't? So let's move on. We'll talk about Tether.
I haven't been wrong on anyone before. Yeah.
So let's talk about Tether. And they were accused that Chinese or Asian commercial papers backed 85% of their commercial paper portfolio. And Tether came out and they announced that they have reduced their commercial paper holdings from $30 billion in July 2021 to a mere $3.7 billion just this past month. And the firm, they also reiterate that they don't hold any Chinese commercial paper. They've been saying that all the expiring commercial papers were rolled into U.S. Treasury bills. And they said that the company would continue to do so to get more exposure to commercial paper to reduce the exposure to the commercial paper until it was reduced to zero. So I like that. I mean, they don't want to get any sort of ties to the Chinese paper, the bonds over there. But so there's a lot of FUD around Tether as well. I'm not totally convinced about Tether, to be perfectly honest. I'm there's always a hint of doubt in my mind about
what is the hint?
What protocol does it run on? Does it still run on Ethereum or is it on something else? And if it does run on Ethereum, then isn't there still a point of failure should theoretically AWS go offline? And if a lot of people are relying on Tether, doesn't that create a lot of problems with that? I mean, I don't know. I'd have to look into this further. I'm just spitballing right here. I could be wrong, but I don't know in totality. I just always have that little bit of doubt in my mind about Tether. And I do know that they traded a lot. The volume of trades were extremely high in the past little while, and it dwarfed just about anything else. So they have that going for them, but still, I don't know. There's always some doubt for me.
Yeah, I think all caps is in the chat saying the same thing I would say. The Tether FUD's been going for years. It's just a new face presenting the FUD every cycle. So, you know, years ago it was someone else. Now it's, you know, Mike Green, for example, ProPlum99 on Twitter, who's a friend of ours, Green Candle. If you ever go to his like Tuesday Spaces, Green is in there sometimes, and Tether comes up. The nature of the message hasn't changed. It's that it's not backed. And then when they tell you it is backed, okay, well, it's not backed by the right stuff. And then when they tell you, okay, well, we're going to get rid of the wrong stuff then, and we're going to back it with the right stuff. Well, it's not good enough. Okay, well, we just did $7 billion in redemptions. Well, it's still not enough. Okay, well, you let me know when it's enough. But these guys moving the goalposts like they do with everything else. I don't know why I expect anything different on Tether, and I probably won't get anything different until Bitcoin's at, you know, a million a coin. It's going to continue. It's too much, too many incentives for people to keep wishing for Tether's downfall and promoting Tether as a scam, Ponzi, you know, illiquid asset base, whatever, for it to stop anytime soon.
But don't confuse my doubt for them as wanting them to fail. I just don't know. And ditto with Circle. I don't want to see the USDC fail as well. But if it does, I mean, obviously it's outside my control. Well, anyways, let's move on. And we talked briefly about this last week, the Chinese real estate market. And this is massive, but this is something we should be taking an eye on, like keeping an eye on it. And apparently the real estate market in China shrank 7% year over year. And Chinese banks, they face mortgage losses of around $350 billion. And this is the worst case scenario. Right now, the confidence has plunged in the property market over in China.
China's been propped up very, very, their economy has been propped up with construction, real estate. These are two very big sectors of their economy. And it seems like it is a bubble waiting to burst. And if it does, we are not going to be shielded from it. It's definitely going to impact us as well. So really keep an eye on this, because this is something that could cause some real problems for us moving forward should shit hit the fan.
Kind of flying under the radar, the Chinese real estate thing. Evergrande kind of went away last September, was more commercial based than this is, but very strange that there's not more coverage of, like, you know, 100 million people or whatever it is, like, refusing to pay their mortgage together. Like, don't you think that's newsworthy? It seems like it should be newsworthy.
Yeah, well, the problem I find is that it's hard to get trustworthy news out of there. So what you're getting out of there...
I told you how to do it. You agreed. All you got to do is go to YouTube, find the one that says it's Chinese state media, and then take it as gospel.
What do you think they're going to be reporting?
Anything they warn you about, that's gospel.
Yeah, but if it is Chinese state media, are they going to be reporting?
It's probably fine. Okay, find a Russian state media one then. I'm waiting for the warning. I wanted my wife a while ago when Twitter was like doing the little like the glyph or whatever under the Chinese state media tweets. I wanted my wife to make me one that said, you know, be careful with this. It's American state media, but she never did. I got to add that to the CBP wish list maybe.
Hang on. We got some spam I got to take care of. Oh,
we made what it. We made it. The dating bot. Love it, man.
I just kicked him out. So
boot.
Yeah.
Block user. No longer.
Yeah. If anyone's going to come on here and talk about some dating shit, fuck off. Anyways, so in the United States, there is a proposed ban on stock trading for lawmakers. And this is going to apply also to their spouses and the senior staff. And this is potentially going to come in or be passed and maybe come into effect maybe in August. So this month here, it's interesting to see what's going on. Are they doing this at a time when Pelosi's in Asia, so she's not able to drum up interest against this type of bill? And if it does pass, and if they do say,
do you think they shipped her to Taiwan?
Maybe this is the reason why. Like, you were asking why they did it. So because of some alleged shenanigans. But I hypothesize that should this pass, days later, she's going to retire. That's what I'm going to suspect what's going to happen. I don't know if it's really going to be something that will come to reality, but that's my suspicion.
How can anyone look at this and think that it's anything but a good idea to ban people and their families related to, like, the lawmaking crowd from trading? How can this ever be viewed as a bad idea? Help me understand that, because I don't understand. Who is the guy who's going to get up on the podium and filibuster this bill like Bernie does any Republican spending bill? Who's going to be the guy? Who's doing it? Listen, we can't ban. It's a free market. These are not the you know, our founding fathers would have fought on with muskets and swords and daggers for the right to trade insider information. It's no way. There's no one who's taking up this cross, right? Except Nance. Who else is in there? We got to get that stuck up. Remember that list we had before with, like, all the senators and congresspeople mm-hmm. who beat the S&P? And it was like basically everybody beat it except you and me. Everyone over there beat the S&P.
It wasn't that big, but you're right.
It was a robust list of really people great at due diligence, all working for Double D Capital Management.
See, I'm wondering if they're getting private citizens to write in and give their support to or say against it. I wonder if Paul P, just some random guy named Paul P.
That's a NIM? You think it's NIM?
I don't like this. This is not good.
the town hall, Paul P comes in. He's got the glasses and the mustache. Like, no, you don't know me.
Anyway, so let's talk about Celsius very, very briefly. This again? Past week.
What week is this? This is like episode 65 or 66 or 71 here. We thought we were done with these guys.
This is going to be very, very brief, but I just wanted to announce that they have reported a data breach, and this is after an employee of one of their vendors leaked customers' emails to third party. So just when you think the whole Celsius saga has come to an end, there's always a little bit more that we just got to dig and find. So if you are a Celsius client or a Celsius client, unfortunately, your email may have been leaked, which whatever it is, it is what it is. And you just have to deal with it.
Sir, what can be said about these things? Are we surprised that these guys who ran a Ponzi scheme are also leaking your data? We cannot be surprised about this. This is the most expected story of the year.
I'm shocked about this. And I'm and if I was a Celsius customer or were, I'd be fucking livid. I'd take them to task. What could you do at this point, though? I think it's
nothing. What are you gonna do? Pull your money out? They already lost it. You're in forced HODL mode.
Remember, they would, was it them? They were forcing people to go into HODL mode that they couldn't take their money out for 24 hours.
That, they did that, and then BlockFi said that you couldn't withdraw Bitcoin on a weekend because there's no service. Like, what do you mean? When someone's gonna sign something, let's just give me the fucking coin, man. Anyway, well,
don't you know Bitcoin stops operating at 7 p.m. on Friday nights and doesn't start?
It's not bankers' hours. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Man. Anyways, Argentina. Unfortunately, things are going really bad over there. They were recently bailed out by the IMF, and that IMF bailout included that their commercial banks were no longer going to be able to provide Bitcoin services to their clients. And, well, yeah, it looks like things are really going bad over there. The government looks like it's running out of money. Subsidies, the programs are being cut. Food and fuels, it's scarce. The unemployment, get this. Unemployment.
Are you talking about America, or are you talking about somewhere else?
The state of Argentina.
Oh, interesting. It's
just a little further south than Florida. Their unemployment rate, 43%. Incredible. And their inflation is standing at 60%. So things are not looking good over there. And this is a country that has applied to join BRICS. So you see, like, up until this point, dealing with IMF and all this shit hasn't been very fruitful for them. So maybe their BRICS application will get approved soon and things may improve for them. But for the time being, it's shit in Argentina.
Tough situation, man. All kidding aside, this is what happens when you let your currency get away from you and you squander natural resources and start thinking about, you know, enriching your family and your friends and yourself instead of... It's not even dynastic thinking you need. You just got to think about something that's more than an hour in front of you to not fuck this up so badly. But here we are. You had another one, right?
Yeah. I got a story about OpenSea, and they implemented a new feature. And this one is apparently that comes with an exploit, which is, you kind of expect that with OpenSea. So you can now buy items, and you could do so on behalf of different wallet addresses. Now, one would wonder, why would anybody want to do this? But people are buying on behalf of larger NFT people, and with the influence, which trying to use their influence to pump up their shit. It's anything and everything is possible in the NFT universe. They'll do anything to pump up their product and try to FOMO in. And this is another one. OpenSea, got to give credit. This is very creative, but what a fucking sham this is.
What is the point of being on OpenSea anymore?
Like, to get seized. Why?
That's it, though. Like, there's no reason. NFTs are in the tank. No one's selling pictures of frogs and ducks anymore for millions of dollars. Why are you still there? Who's still there?
There has to be a lot of people.
It's bag holders, right? Like, that's
for
all it
sure.
is.
For, and you know what? There's probably a few people coming on board now thinking, you know what? They see shit on like YouTube, TikTok, where the fuck they see, and they see, oh, you can make a lot of money doing NFTs. They're preying on the very, very weak, the ones that don't understand, that are just trying to hit a home run because they have no fucking hopes. And they're thinking just buying some stupid JPEG is going to bring them to the promised land. Ain't going to happen, man.
Do you ever watch those? You probably have seen these because sometimes I watch them on YouTube and I'm on the show account by mistake. These like Doomer stories where like Doomer Wojak or Zoomer Wojak is trying to get, he's trying to get a girlfriend. He's going to do it by getting rich off NFTs. These are the most hilarious low budget videos I've ever seen.
Yeah. And you know, the pump music, I've been throwing it on the Bitcoin stuff because that's, I did some research and yeah, that's royalty free stuff. And I'm going to take advantage of it.
Pump it up is royalty free.
I don't know if it's pump it up, but there's a pump music that's played on the zero budget stories. Oh. Every time. If I play the music, you know what I'm talking about, but it's royalty free. So I've been dumping it up. See, the production value is increasing at the Canadian Bitcoiners.
We're very thrifty. We get all our design work is done for free. I just have to pay in relationship capital, and Len is out there finding royalty free music. Piece of cake.
Yeah,
you can start your own podcast too, Anon. It's not that hard.
Last thing, Bitcoin Independence Day is upon us. I hope you celebrated like any other Bitcoiner would do. I saw you had steak. Am I wrong in that assessment?
I did. There. I did have a steak. I bought two steaks, knowing that my wife would want dinner tonight when she got back from the cottage. So I cooked up. I did a pretty good job, actually. I'm a big cast iron on the stove guy these days. A lot of control when you do it that way. I don't know how you cook yours, but I think between sous vide and cast iron on the stove, that's got to be the best steaks I've had. Barbecue. It's too many things out of your control. You just never know what you're going to get. And I think if you're going to spend money on meat, cooking it is really 85% of the battle. So I prefer that control. That's why I celebrated Independence Day. Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it.
I'm a big Wagyu guy, and I've been trying to get you on board the Wagyu train as well. It's something you can't screw up. And once you put it in your mouth, you'll understand what I mean. The thing just absolutely melts in your mouth. It's so delicious. Very expensive though, so it's not something you have all the time, but once you do, it's a life-changing, life-altering experience. Check it out one time, Joey. You'll never go back.
Yeah, maybe we'll see.
We'll see. Fuck that, man. We'll do this as a live stream. We'll actually have it cooked.
You gonna come over for dinner? Yeah.
Let's do it. We'll do a show in person again. We've only done three, I think, in total, right? Two pretty sure plates. One at yeah. The Safari Barn Grill.
We could stream. I'm pretty sure I could figure out how to do an in-person two mic stream if I had to. I think. We'll talk it over. We got lots of time.
We do. All right. And you know what? That's it. There's no other stories to talk about. And since we've already done our Bitcoiner and NoCoiner of the week, we're basically wrapped things
we're
up.
We're done. Holy
that's
shit.
Right. Yeah.
We can't believe it.
Yeah, man. So that's the price
what's the
of
price?
Bitcoin.
I gotta look here.
We got a show palm, a slight one, but a show palm nonetheless. In fact, behind me, you can see the number in US dollars if you want it.
Oh, $23,320 US.
Yeah, there so 29,981 in Canadian dollars. Man, just 19 bucks shy of 30,000. So we could do it.
Yeah, it's coming. Only a matter of time. Given all the news today with Taiwan and all the other shit, price is still holding up pretty good. We just had our first bullish close on the monthly chart in a while, which is great. So excuse me. Yeah, if you're here on audio, thank you for listening. Stick around on video and come to video as well. If you're just on audio, listen to the after show. We'll see you at on Wednesday, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern time with Preston Byrne of Anderson Kiln Law to talk about the new UK legislation. Take care. We'll see you soon.
Take care.